Boys Lunch.
Here we go.
Testing, testing.
Action. Welcome back to the pod. We're Boys happy lunch. To be here. Boys Lunch.
Been a while.
Been a while. Actually, it hasn't been a while. We posted on Monday.
Oh, that's true.
Yep.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. We just finished administering our last finals. It is Friday of break, the first Friday of break.
It's true. We're free.
Yeah. You put in all your grades?
All except SCED 105. Still got to get those in. And I got to get them over to Heartland, which means I got to figure out how to get them over to Heartland. So that'll be my afternoon. I'm looking forward to it, though.
It's the life of a college professor.
Am I right? yeah. Hey, Boys Lunch. one@gmail.com. You can get in touch with us whenever you like. I believe Kevin Cook has continued to email us after he listens each episode. So Kevin, as always, we are happy to hear from you. And he even called back to a joke. He's like, you gave me a hard time with the podcast. Like, which podcast? He like found it. And it was, I said that you were funnier than him.
Oh, nice. You said I was funnier than him?
Yeah.
When?
In the interview with Jude, I said you were just much funnier than Kevin.
Oh, jeez.
I think it hurt a little bit because, I mean, Kevin went all out for that interview. He put on like an animal head.
And, oh,
like,
did he really?
Yeah. It was,
oh, jeez.
He is pretty funny. We love you, Kevin.
Bless your heart.
Bless your heart. And you can always follow us on Instagram at Boys Lunch Podcast. And there may be a Facebook page out there. We have no idea. So you'd have to ask intern Casey on how he's doing with that. Casey, get on it.
Bless their hearts.
Bless their hearts. Who? Who would bless?
I don't know. You guys didn't realize whenever someone starts off a conversation with bless their hearts, they're about to just say something very mean about the people. Yeah.
But bless their hearts. But bless their hearts, though. Charlie G, don't they try?
Last night, I just have had some bad luck, like ordering takeout, like carryout stuff.
What happened?
It's just a situation where you order it online, and it tells you when it's going to be ready, then you show up, and like it's not ready. And they're not really like trying to get it ready, and they don't really feel too bad about the fact that it's not ready. But like, it's hard because like it's teenagers and a lot of them haven't learned how to like smooth things over and like deal with confrontation. So they just like don't know how to like help make things right, or like how to like
Give
customer service, you know. And I think for them it's like, well, I'm not the manager. I don't know if I have the right to like smooth things over and make things good. So like, I just have like a string of those. It reveals like a dark side of me that I.
And you're not asking for much. You just want your food.
I ordered one kid entree and. It was just sitting on a shelf and they just like weren't bringing it out to me. I don't know.
Excuse me?
I just don't like I know I don't seem like a planner.
Yeah.
But certain things I am. Like I'll order something at a like specific time. And I know like, okay, I'll go here and here and then I'll grab the kids there and we'll end up there.
Right.
Like those types of things I'm just like very specific about. And when it's like taken a little bit away from me, I just get really frustrated. Mm. So like revealed like an impatience in me that I don't necessarily like.
I love those moments of where like the otherness of the human condition, specifically your own, you're just like, how did I just go from zero to a monster?
And it's hard for me. Like I just can't even reason myself out of it sometimes. Like you don't need to be frustrated anymore. You have the food, everything's going to be fine. And it's like hard for me to get out of the.
It's like me trying to get the girls in the van. Like it would be okay if we were a minute late and I'm always like a little early. Mm-hmm. So like, I got time, but I was like, can you guys just get buckled up?
Yeah. Isella knows, like, I'm like that on vacations. It's like, we'll get there. Like, there's no need for me to, like, get impatient about the extra minute we spend at the gas station.
Right.
But.
I'm racing time.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a big part of it.
So you made a high school student cry? Is this what happened?
What happened?
No, you.
Did I?
I don't know. I don't know. What's the end of the story? Did you get the food and did you make the high school student who made it?
Oh, no. Manager ended up, they were just very flustered and they. Didn't even smooth it over, but whatever.
I felt bad. I was in Mary, and I won't name the restaurant, but she put in a mobile order, and it's got like one of those things where it tracks it.
Yeah.
And it was like, I don't know, 40 minutes after she had ordered it, and it still like hadn't moved into the preparing phase. Yeah. And she's like, I'm sitting outside of the place.
Yeah.
So she ended up having to, she like went and picked up Sienna, came back, you know, 20 minutes later, and then it's like, and now we're preparing. Like, hi.
That's like, I think all these companies are.
And they're struggling. Just
okay.
To have bodies in the kitchen. So,
I'm fine.
Big plans for Christmas break. We're there. We are amidst Christmas break right now. What do you got planned?
I think
we'll celebrate Christmas.
We will probably celebrate Christmas, and then I think we probably I don't know if it's confirmed yet. We might celebrate New Year's as well.
That's exciting. Tyler Sears would like to know if you and I are throwing what he referred to as a rager on New Year's Eve together. I think they assume that our families are going to get together on New Year's Eve.
Do you want to? I mean, we can.
I guess we could.
We can make some apps.
But I just like, why is that a question you have right now?
Yeah.
You're about to take your last final. That was his last question.
It's depressing in his mind. No, just kind of relaxing, taking in each day as a blessing from God.
Are you
traveling yet to go see?
When are you heading down to the STL?
We're going out on Christmas and staying a few days. I think the boys might stay a few extra days with the in-laws. So, yeah, I think they're excited.
You too. What do you guys have?
Sella's got some time off, so I think just taking it each day as a
romantic staycation, you think?
I don't know. I mean, we'll probably just take it each day as God's blessing to us, but
it's like a post-game interview. Yeah, we just take it one game at a time. You know, we're not really looking ahead.
It's kind of just like a it's all everyone just kind of came and executed what they need to do. You know? How about you?
We got the Sakura Christmas.
Last Christmas.
I just gave my wife's maiden name. They're just a few numbers away from stealing our credit card information.
Jeez.
Uh-oh. But anyway, we've got Sakura Family Christmas this Sunday. That's when we
get together.
And then this is actually the first year we're doing actually Christmas morning at our own house.
Yeah.
Because typically we've gone over to my parents, but my brother and his wife, they wanted, so she can be up there. To be with her mom on Christmas. We're going to do a Christmas Eve.
Nice.
To be different, but good. And then, yeah, we'll have that kind of like casual, classic Christmas morning. We're getting a fireplace put in.
Ooh.
So we'll have a fireplace that works. Ooh.
We have not turned on a fireplace and I'm scared. It's like a gas one. Mm. And I wasn't listening to the inspector of how to turn it on when he was like taking us around the house. And I'm just scared that something's going to explode.
Yeah. Well, we had that gas leak.
Oh, okay.
So we had to shut off the gas, and now we're finally having somebody come in and like fix the gas leak and then replace the gas log. So.
Is mine leaking right now?
Yeah. Well, you would know.
Could you smell it?
Yes. Okay. It was bad.
Okay.
It's like one of those things where you call the gas company and they're required by law to be like, you must leave the house.
Oh, nice.
Do not turn anything on or off. And this was like 2 days after we bought the house.
Oh, okay.
So like I had to send Mary and the girls like over to their parents and I'm like standing outside waiting for the gas company. And he just walks in like it's nothing.
Right.
But the phone call's like, your house is gonna blow if you even move the wrong way. I was like, it's fine. It's fine.
Oh. So how many pillows do you sleep with?
How many pillows do I sleep with? Yeah. One. I'm a one pillow guy. Would I prefer to have two? I'm getting to that stage in my life.
Really?
I feel like I'm getting old enough.
Are you a soft or a tough, like hard pillow?
I don't necessarily.
Do you need a little give,
preference.
Or do you need a little support? Like, where
I'd rather have a little give. You know, if it's like one of those, like, if it's too thick or like, I don't know, my neck feels like it's.
Can I give a shout out to your brother?
Sure,
Aaron.
Yeah.
For our wedding, got us like these super comfortable pillows.
Get out of here.
Yeah, we just put them on. Like, no one's gonna get us these. Like, Aaron got them. So thank you, Aaron. Those like, I can't go back now. So he pampered me.
Man. Yeah. I don't think. When we were registered,
I think it was Aaron. I'm giving you credit, Aaron. Yeah.
When we registered for pillows, it was about our breaking point when we were in Bed Bath & Beyond for like an hour and a half registering for stuff. And we were just like, let's just get it over with.
Yeah.
So not displeased with our
pillows. How's your chiropractor then?
We are old.
What would you sing on a karaoke night?
Karaoke night?
These are just coming to my head. I didn't like prepare these at all.
Is it a duet with my wife? Because it is. Mary and I would kill Kiss by a Rose by Seal.
Nice.
That's our go-to.
What's you by yourself? Kiss by a Rose?
Seal? No, it would be Whitney Houston. I want to dance with somebody.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a classic. Really, any Whitney Houston, I feel like I would absolutely nail.
Those came really fast for you.
Yeah, did you? Yeah, sorry.
I honestly expected
these were
you
not
to
shared with
more.
Me yeah. beforehand. Honestly, yeah, those are just my go-to.
I only want to be with you, you Blowfish, if you're wondering.
Oh, yeah. I can see
you and me. We'll come from different worlds. I did, if you didn't realize, I pressed play there.
That was a Darius Rucker.
Anyway, last thing.
All right.
Watch the Beatles documentary on Disney Plus. Get back.
How is it?
All 8.5 hours of it. It was good. You have to really like the Beatles and music to watch the 8.5 hours. But
okay. So that makes me a little nervous.
Do you like the Beatles?
I do like the Beatles, but
I'm not. Do you like music?
Not enough. Like, I don't know.
You have to be dedicated.
I've not really watched any other music documentaries.
Six hours of it are almost just like a peek into them just trying to record and like make the music itself. So like, I don't know. Yeah. But it was cool. Like it made me miss like that creative process of.
Do you think the Bordwicks have all watched it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like there's no doubt in my mind.
You think it was like the.
And if
the
you haven't yet, yeah. Mr. Bordwick, I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah.
Not mad. I'm just.
If you could send us a review to boyslunch1@gmail.com, let us know what you think.
Yeah.
Should I invest my time not being a huge music and documentary fan?
It was exciting. So it is Advent.
Is it?
It's Pink Week.
Ooh, I thought it was Rose. That's an argument for another day.
Anyway, we kind of wanted to do some type of little reflection as this is being released the Monday of Christmas week, I guess.
Yeah.
Or not Christmas week, the fourth week of Advent leading up to Christmas.
Maybe you know what I mean, yeah. It'd be a nice little run into it, maybe a quick refresher, kind of get your heart and mind in the right spot. Because I know for me, sometimes those first few weeks might be a little wasted. But it's nice to have always a good time to kind of reset and prepare yourself for the coming of the Lord. So yeah, this is a fitting way to do so.
I kind of want to do it. Like, I want to tell a little story and teach a little bit.
Are you a teacher?
And not like an intimidating teaching, share some family story teaching.
Yes. Stick around, guys. This is going to be good.
Because I think you'll like the payoff of a little Advent reflection.
Yeah, let's do it.
So I wanted to give a kind of a brief history of the church's spiritual life, because that's like the heart and the pulse of the church is the spirituality that's been developed throughout time. And I like learning about it because it's, for me, it's like learning about your ancestors and figuring out that your ancestors are like some of the coolest people ever.
Yeah.
And like very inspiring and influential. And like just learning from people in any kind of like job, like learning from people who have mastered that job or have like excelled and are on that way of perfection is inspiring. And I think if you look at the history of the spirituality in the church, like you can spend your entire life just trying to take from all these spiritual writers and these influential people. But for the majority of the church's history, especially after Christianity was legalized in the 300s and developed, and then the fall of Rome, the church's spiritual life has been communicated, I think, through our religious orders.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's something that's foreign to our world because we don't really have a lot of experience and exposure to people within religious orders, because I think, especially within America, it's just been a path that the church has died out, I think, since the 60s and 70s. And the spiritual life has been run by these monastic movements. And when people say monastic or monasticism, they're talking about monks, which we get from monos, like the solo, solitary. From the early church, you have these people going out into the deserts in the East. So when we talk about the East, we're talking about Egypt and Syria and Israel and Turkey. They would go and live these kind of different lives. And for a lot of people, that was very appealing. And I think for when I tell kids about that nowadays, this idea of living in solitary or living in a cloister or living in a monastery, they just see it as crazy and a waste of time. But I kind of remind them, like, for me, I've never had a desire to join the military, like never in my life. I appreciate what the military is, but it's not necessarily for me. And it's a specific lifestyle and it's difficult. But the people that do it, they do it because it's a challenge and because they like those difficulties. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't judge people for wanting to go into the military. I think it's a specific calling and it's been such a great grace.
Yeah, it's a fulfillment of a vocation. Yeah, absolutely.
But basically, yeah, they have been, I think, the heart and the soul. It's born out of the work and labor of these holy individuals and people listening to the Holy Spirit. Saint Benedict is really kind of seen as maybe the starting of like these organized religious orders. The Benedictines in the 500s is where you kind of have your first group of people coming together and saying, let's live as a community and let's seek God and fight the devil as a family. And let's take on this specific mission. And those monks were more about solitude, manual labor, kind of away from the world. As kind of things progress, you have different groups spiral off from that. The Cistercians, the Carthusians, great spiritual kind of contemplative masters, maybe more in the 1100s. Kind of in the 1200s is where you have the Franciscans, the Dominicans, so St. Francis, St. Dominic, wanting to kind of take them out of these cloisters and get them within the world to preach the gospel. The Dominicans more within the intellectual pursuits and academics and universities. Think of like St. Thomas Aquinas, scholasticism, and the Franciscans more in like this extreme poverty. Let's live with the people. Let's go to the cities. Let's take on kind of the suffering of Christ and bring that to people. Suffering of Christ. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
the humanity
absolutely.
Of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
All this makes sense so far?
Absolutely.
And within these, like, there was definitely distinct spiritualities, and a lot of these maybe bled into the lay people within these communities that they were serving. But a lot of it was written more for these people within those monastic communities. In the 1400s, you start to have, for the first time, people kind of explaining how to pray, methodical mental prayer, spiritual exercises. And for some of them, like maybe like a Thomas A Kempis, Imitation of Christ, maybe you've heard of that book, very popular spiritual book. That would be kind of this time period. But his was even kind of, have you read Imitation? Yeah. It is very much still like for a monk, a friar, a nun.
Yeah.
Like there are a lot of directives in there that are like, it's maybe a little bit harder to apply it to like the married life or the lay person.
Yeah.
But it was like, they started to actually start to describe like, prepare to meditate, try to get rid of distractions, pick a material, apply your mind, your judgment, your will, direct to God your desires that have been stimulated. In that period of like 1400s, 1500s, you guys still here with me? That was important because they almost used this as a means of spiritual reform. It was a way to call back a lot of clergy and religious to like what a Christian life was. St. Teresa of Avila said, it's difficult to imagine the possibility of remaining in sin, especially serious sin, if you're practicing daily meditation. So around this time of the 1500s, while some people tried to change the church, this would be like the Reformation era. Martin Luther tries to change the church by changing the teachings. All right, it's not our theology of the Eucharist that was the problem. It was the spiritual life of people that was the problem. It was maybe the way that some of the church was governed that was the problem. So during this time, you had a unique reform of the church and some of the greatest spiritual writers that we have ever received. The post-Tridentine era.
I knew you could know yourself.
But you had the Council of Trent in 1545, finally meeting after you have Martin Luther in 1517. In the 1530s, you have Henry VIII in England.
You started on Zwingli.
You have John Calvin in the Swiss Reformation. But so you have kind of the early 1500s, some of these Protestant thinkers. But right after that, in the 1530s, you also have St. Ignatius of Loyola founding this new religious order, the Jesuits.
Legend.
Let me just take a quick teaching moment here. The Jesuits are a Catholic group. I think my kids always get confused. It's not like another religion. So if like it's a Jesuit school, that means it's a religious order, just like the Benedictines, the Franciscans, Dominicans, etc. Yeah,
they're a little late to the party, but influential, some real heroes in that.
But for any like students of church history, it's cool how these religious orders form to meet the needs of the time.
Yeah.
And Ignatius saw the needs of the time. Like he really mastered the spiritual exercises and retreats, really encouraging people within the academics because they're all about education. Let's get these people to actually reflect on what their life is so they can actually discern and learn, teach them how to pray so they can be good people.
Oh yeah, and I think that's quite appropriate that you say it. It's they came about for a specific time for a specific reason, and they addressed a need within the church. I mean, Franciscans, Dominicans, the powerhouses of like Saint Catherine of Siena. Ever heard of her?
Yeah.
These great reformers from within that bring about a great gift and spirituality too. I mean, I don't want to name a few and then like leave off a ton, but there's just so many of these people that are just great witnesses to the truth of the gospel and bring it to the people in a great time of need.
So thank you for listening to the lead up.
Yeah.
Because the payoff I want to get to is St. Teresa of Avila. Pretty much like unmatched in her like authority on the theology of prayer.
Absolutely.
We've talked about the other female doctors of the church. We did an episode on Hildegard and Catherine of Siena. Mm-hmm. And we've also done an episode on Therese. And we haven't done one yet on Teresa of Avila. And I want to bring her up because during this time, I mean, you have your big hitters of spiritual theology of Ignatius of Loyola, Francis de Sales, John of the Cross, who she works with. But like her work within the Carmelite order, which kind of got revived during that time, her ability to teach how to actually have a conversation with God, how to actually have a relationship with God was impeccable.
Yes. And the clarity, I think, that she brought to it, especially to kind of put to words, or at least maybe put it in a way in which, like, I don't know, gave voice to feelings that people were experiencing in their struggles with prayer or their maybe some of the things that were impeding their ability to break through. And I think she just has a beautiful way of kind of painting this picture of the reality of the soul and the desire to be united to God and what that looks like. And I think she does a phenomenal job of putting words to that.
It is like deep and hard to take in sometimes, but it is very practical and descriptive. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the era, I think, when we kind of take it for granted. They really started to actually give vocabulary of what happens within prayer.
Right.
How do you grow in a relationship? And she wrote it for, I mean, friars and nuns, but it was available and accessible to lay people.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely encouraging lay people now. What I wanted to bring up, one of her famous works is called The Interior Castle, and she describes the soul as a castle, and the journey is really entering into this castle that has these many mansions or rooms or dwellings, as she calls them. And she says there are, it's hard to even imagine how many there would be because our soul has so many depths and so many things. But as you kind of get closer within this castle, there are these different dwellings. She describes seven of them. And on the innermost part of our soul in our castle is the where the king dwells. Christ is enthroned. So as the soul, basically the soul progresses through these. The first three stages are this active prayer, and the last four are more this passive and mystical prayer. So really kind of a cool way to describe this journey. But what I kind of want to bring up as Advent begins, you can kind of maybe talk about this now, like Advent as something that kind of starts to pique your interest. You were kind of talking about this.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. It's one of my favorite times of the year because no matter where you are, and I think I reflect back on my own life, no matter where I was in my own spiritual journey, there's something about the beauty of the Advent season and just kind of, I don't know if it's the innocence of this infant Jesus dwelling here amongst the chaos of the world, or if it's just like the coming together of family, or the beauty of, like, even if it's like a time to rest because, you know, you've got a break from school when you're, or teaching for us, right? Or this idea that we come together as a community to celebrate into the joy that is within the world that we see visibly within ourselves and our family and that time shared together. But ultimately what lies at the center of that is Christ. And it's, I don't know what it is, but it's a time of great peace and joy that allows us to kind of rest with something beyond ourselves, something that's calling us forward, almost like, I don't know, there's always this play between dark and light within the Advent and Christmas season. And there's just something that's like, I don't know, a glimmer of hope and renewed joy that always kind of, I don't know, I feel is kind of resonating within my heart each time this season. So as we draw closer, like it's almost as if my body experiences that in some small way. And this it tugs at the heart to want to do something with it, right?
It's a little stirring within.
Right, exactly.
And it's high, I think, hard for people to avoid it. There's like, I think, the image of light is something that I always like. How powerful light is within the darkness. In a dark room, you light one match and how it can just envelop the entire room. Mm-hmm. The power of light over darkness, the power of Christ over sin and evil. And I think if you read a lot of these spiritual masters, they always talk about like kind of the beginning of the journey, these people that are maybe lost, maybe just going from mortal sin to mortal sin, and the darkness that is kind of taking on our, like the darkness that's enveloping our soul. Ignatius talks about his first like rules of a spiritual discernment are, you know, for these people that are going from mortal sin to mortal sin, the way that the enemy basically keeps us busy to not actually think about the light, to not think about Christ at the center of our castle, is the enemy starts to basically put sensual, apparent pleasures in front of us. Imagine sensual delights and pleasures to hold us more and more in our sin and our vices. And the good spirit in that method, if you're just going from mortal sin to mortal sin, you're struggling really to find goodness. The good spirit uses basically an opposite method, pricking at you, biting at your conscience through the process of reason. So God is going to be biting at your conscience and your reason, your ability to kind of process goodness within your life and see truth within your life. That's how God speaks to us. If we want to use Teresa's example of the castle, to try to get us in that, past the outer wall, past the outer courtyard, into the actual castle itself. She says a lot of people just stand on the outside of the castle, just never actually entering their soul. They just stare at the outside of the wall and maybe some of the things, and they hang out with the vermin in the mud and the moat on the outside. And they never actually dive in. So God kind of uses that pricking. And I think that's something that the stirring of Advent to get us to enter into that castle, because the light at the center is something that we can seek, and how each of these little mansions and these rooms that we progress in is a new kind of delight that we can maybe understand, maybe some self-knowledge, some humility, just brightness and joy and hope, like you said. The other one I wanted to say, the second rule is for those that are people who are going from good to better. You're trying to actually cleanse yourself of sin in the service of God. The way that the evil spirit bites at you is to sadden you and put obstacles in a disquieting way with false reasons. And the way that God is going to be able to encourage you is to give you courage and strength, consolation, inspiration, quiet, easing, putting away your obstacles. So you see these spiritual masters start to describe the beginning of this journey. For these people that are wandering, maybe you're seeking things that aren't good, or maybe you're seeking things that are good. There's these kind of patterns that we see within life. My last little thing, and I'll toss it to you. In these like first chambers, basically, Teresa turns basically her attention to these people. It says, little the glowing light from the king's royal chamber filter into these first dwelling places. Too many things still entice and distract our souls there, prevent us from taking the time to search for the true light. So for these people, every now and then, maybe they think of God, but as they come in, maybe they let some of that vermin from the outside into those first dwelling places. So there's still a glimmer, but there's a lot of light that maybe is still kind of taken. And for people that are maybe committing mortal sin, she says, it's like a black cloth covering the crystal of this castle where the light at the center is trying to shine, but we're covering the crystal where it's not able to actually go through the crystal. Kind of this motif for this idea of darkness versus light, which I thought was appealing for Advent. But as we start to progress, that second dwelling is for people that have actually taken steps in the practice of prayer. They're more receptive to the promptings and invitations of Christ's grace, which comes through external means, maybe books or sermons or good friendships or trials. The struggle with the forces of evil is more keenly felt. They're actually able to understand that. And as they kind of start to determine to persevere through the spiritual life, conform the will to God's, which kind of leads them to the third dwelling place where they start to actually guard against venial sin. They're fond of mortification, periods of recollection. They seek to use their time well, practice charity toward their neighbor, maintain a balance in the use of the speech, the way they kind of manage their household, the things within their life. They are good Christians and the Lord will not deny them entrance into the final dwelling place.
I just read kind of a lot and rambled a lot, but there's just a lot of depth in these spiritual writings. And I wanted to kind of expose some of these to you guys, because I think a lot of us are struggling with maybe within those first few dwelling places that we're outside the wall of the castle, and how Advent can be this drawing us into the light at the center to not cover up the crystal and to actually explore these dwellings and these mansions within.
Yeah. And I think the reason we bring this up now is because it ought not to be wasted. This is an opportunity for everyone. I understand, like, Christmas is not the same for everyone. There's the hectic schedule, sometimes the traveling, the stress, and all these different things. But I don't know, for me as a child, and still to this day, every Christmas, there's a moment or moments which I find myself, for example, I can't help but think back to these long drives back from Nyanic, Illinois, from my grandparents' house, where it's like, you know, there'd be a fresh fallen snow where it's snowing and it's at nighttime. And there's just like, you had these moments of just like peace and tranquility to like actually consider something. Like, you have these peaceful, restful moments where it's like you feel this tugging on the heart, and what do I do with this? What is my next step? These types of things. And I think what we're offering here is like, this is an opportunity not to allow kind of the commercial aspects of Christmas to kind of continue to block out the light that's trying to break through. But what we're saying is to take advantage of these opportunities to try to understand and accept and acknowledge what is actually taking place within the heart here. We've got to give them the opportunity, and we can't waste these moments. I mean, Christmas time, no matter where you are practicing your faith wise, typically people end up in a pew at a beautiful celebration of the Eucharist, whether it's they haven't been there since Easter or the Christmas prior, or maybe you haven't even returned to Mass yet because the pandemic still is going on, right? There's still an opportunity to find the time to rest with Christ and to allow him to kind of shine through the darkness and to approach him and ask, like, what is it? What is the next step? Mm-hmm. And I think these spiritual masters kind of offer that to us. And I think it's quite beautiful.
Yeah. Start having these conversations with the people in your life, start having conversations with God. And I think these messages of joy and hope, I think that's what the interior castle is showing, is that there's a journey that we're on within Advent of preparing of the coming. That Adventus is that same journey of our inner soul, mm-hmm. getting into this, the joy and the brightness that illuminates who we actually are within, like, our the castle of our soul, I guess. Yeah. Who is the actual king? Absolutely. And that king sits on a throne in our castle. And that king sits on a throne in the manger.
This is just a good time to reevaluate. It always is. And I think this time of year, even amongst the craziness, there's always a moment that in my life that breaks through.
Yeah.
I mean, I go back to that, you know, the Christmas tree in Nyanic, where I'm staring out on the winter streets of Nyanic, Illinois, a little village in Nyanic, you know, or Christmas morning with my family, or Mass, you know, and these grand nativity sets. I don't know. There's just so many memories that I'm drawn back to that. I just knew that it was good. There was something good there, and I wanted to hold on to it. And I wish I had done more with it. It's mm-hmm. not that they didn't have their effect, but like, there are opportunities every year.
Yeah. Like you said, it's just being open to letting the light come and actually illuminate who
there
we
is good, right? Yeah. There is good, and he is here.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Any shout outs?
Just for Christmas, you know, just
shout out to Christmas.
Yeah. Baby Jesus. Just shout out to my family. Mark, Janet, Aaron, Mary, Zaylee, Sienna, Caroline, the whole clan's getting together. The whole Socorro family, don't have time to name them all. I'm just thankful for them in my lives, and I'm really looking forward to spending some quality time with them over break.
Yeah, shout out to, you're right. I think
especially my family, just making Christmas always something that was so important and so magical, like inspiring that kind of awe and that a childlike joy. I think that I've been able to keep with me throughout my life. So a big shout out to my family and my parents.
Love you guys.
Yeah, and to Jesus.
And to Jesus.
HBD.
For the kingdom.
For the kingdom.